Hello and welcome to PharmD Unscripted, where we inspire you, educate you, and guide you to write the prescription for your life. I am Dr. Bree.
And I am Dr. Laquita J.
We are your hosts of this lovely podcast. So without further ado, let's get unscripted. Welcome to this week's episode of PharmD Unscripted. Dr. Laquita J and I will be continuing our conversation about finances. This week, we have a very special guest joining us, Dr. Lillian Pedraza. Dr. Lillian Pedraza is a pharmacist, financial coach, and founder of Debt-Free PharmD Community. She is a native of Atlanta, Georgia. She studied molecular biology at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, before earning her doctorate in pharmacy from the University of Georgia College of Pharmacy. Dr. Pedraza has practiced in the retail community pharmacy setting, but currently practices as a managed care pharmacist at a health plan. After graduating from pharmacy school, Dr. Pedraza paid off $102,000 of student loan debt in less than 3 years. The desire to help other pharmacists do the same led her to financial coaching. To further her skills as a financial coach, Dr. Pedraza belongs to the Coach Connections Mastermind, which is a network of financial coaches all around the world. Dr. Pedraza and the Debt-Free PharmD community were most recently featured in the premier issue of Pharmacist, and that's S-I-S, magazine, which celebrates the achievements of women in pharmacy. In her spare time, Dr. Pedraza enjoys reading, watching reality television, as do I, and planning her family's financial future. She and her husband currently reside in Lawrenceville, Georgia, and are on track to retire in the next 15 years.
Welcome to PharmD Unscripted, Dr. Pedraza. We are so blessed, glad, and happy that you are here to offer us and our listeners financial guidance. One thing I really admire about you is that you are continually transcending in your career. You left retail pharmacy, then began managed care pharmacy, so now you are a financial coach. Dr. Bree and I want to frame our talk into three sections today. So we'll talk about your experiences in retail pharmacy, your experiences in managed care pharmacy, as well as being a financial coach. So like you, Dr. Bree and I have practiced in retail. Could you tell us how many years you spent in retail pharmacy?
As a pharmacist, I practiced in retail for a year, but I did also do another 2.5 years as an intern in retail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So my question for you is, so how did you know it was time to enter a different sector of pharmacy?
So it's sort of an interesting story. In pharmacy school, I always had an interest in managed care. I was a member of AMCP, and I kind of always dreamed of that. I came to it a little bit late, so I didn't get a chance to do any internships or anything like that within managed care, and I wasn't able to get a rotation in managed care during my 4th year. So I had worked for retail during pharmacy school, and I got a job offer, and I figured it would be natural to continue along that path. But once I actually started working there, it just wasn't something that really jived with the way I wanted to live my life, and so I started looking to make a change. And honestly, the position came open at a time when I was really looking for a change, and it just kind of was one of those things that all fell together in a crazy way, and I got the position and made the switch and never looked back.
Oh, that's awesome. What did you really not like in particular about retail pharmacy? Or what better aligned in the career that you chose in managed care than in retail?
So the number one thing that I disliked about retail, I actually liked a lot about retail.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I disliked personally was the schedule. Okay. And it just drove me absolutely insane to have to miss church every other week. I was a part of a small group that met on Tuesday night, so I could only go to that every other week. Wednesday night service, I could only go to that every other week. It felt like I was living my life every other week, essentially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the long hours working at least 10 extra hours a week unpaid. It was just really the time and the schedule that was what got to me more than anything.
Okay.
Yes, I totally agree. I'm kind of like that now. So I just like many pharmacists, I would like to transition to a different sector of pharmacy. So what kind of lessons did you learn during your transitional phase that will be helpful to pharmacists like me who want to transition?
I would say when you're looking for jobs, this is what I told myself, and I think it's so important. There are many jobs that I applied for, obviously, that I didn't get. And some I did, you know, interview, and I was offered a couple positions, but ultimately, you know, took the one where I ended up working now. And the thing that I would say is when I looked through job descriptions that were available to me, I asked myself, is this something I think reasonably that I can do or learn to do within a short period of time? And is it something that I would enjoy? And if the answer to that was yes, then I applied to the job. I didn't care if they said you have to have 25,000 years of experience. If I thought that I could reasonably do the job, then I applied. Mm-hmm. And even the job that I got, I think they wanted, you know, on the description, it said 3 to 5 years of experience. And I didn't take this job, but another job I applied to said 5 years. I applied and they raved about my experience, my resume, all this stuff. So I would say, like, if you look at a job and you think you're qualified for it or could be qualified, go ahead and apply, and you'll be surprised a lot of times, you know, what might turn out with that. Don't be scared off by the job description.
Oh, I love that, because it is, a lot of people get discouraged. Like, I know with the position that I currently have, they were looking for someone who had a residency, but I said, look, I can do this. Okay. So I just jumped in there and, like you said, applied, and I said, what do I have to lose? So I definitely think that's great advice.
I did too. So I guess I want to know, like, how was your transition experience? Did it take months until, like, you transitioned? Because you said you practiced in retail for a year. So was it like it just all lined up? Well, I know it's kind of sound like it was all God's timing, but I guess for listeners, how long did that process take? Like, what was, like, the mental challenges you went through?
Or was it like any? Right. Or it was it like a financial transition that you had to prepare yourself for or anything like that?
So it's funny. I don't really think of there being a transition. Mm-hmm. My last day at my retail job, this is actually funny. My last day at my retail job was July 4th, so Independence Day. And my first day at the new job was July 5th.
Okay. Okay.
So I went right on in.
Okay.
It was great. It was a half day. I worked 10 to 2 and left. I was like, goodbye.
I know that's right. Well, that's amazing. So can you explain to our listeners, what is managed care and what are your main responsibilities in this role as a pharmacist?
So managed care, I actually think that it's maybe a little bit of a misnomer for what I do to say managed care. It's considered managed care.
Okay.
But I actually work for a health plan, and I am in the prior authorization department. So I review prior authorizations, both on traditional medications, which would be, you know, blood pressure medications, just anything you kind of dispense in a normal retail pharmacy, as well as specialty medications that you may dispense in a retail pharmacy, depending on your pharmacy, like Mavaret or the Hep C drugs would be specialty drugs that you might dispense in a retail pharmacy, and also drugs on the medical benefit that are usually infused at a doctor's office, so you probably wouldn't necessarily see. So something like Remicade or Rituxan, and anything like that that's used in the medical office, also review for those. It's actually really enjoyable to me. I like learning about new and different drugs. A lot of times we're the first to kind of see a drug when it comes to market. As soon as you see an announcement, you know you're going to be seeing a request for it in the next couple of days. So I think it keeps you on your toes clinically a little bit. Trikafta is one we're seeing now, the new CF drug that just got approved. I think it was last Tuesday or something like that. We've already seen requests for it, but I think we'll probably be approving most of them because it is a miracle drug. So really, that's what I do, working for a health plan that administers Medicaid for several states.
Oh, wow. Well, that is very interesting. And how would you say your work-life balance as a managed care pharmacist?
My work-life balance is definitely fantastic. I work from home.
Oh, so, that's amazing. Wow. I know that's a lot of people. First thing. Yes, well, repeat that again. I know a lot of people want to hear about the work from home opportunities.
Yes, so I work from home. That's the first thing. I have a more regular schedule. I have an hour lunch break, and we only have to cover every fifth weekend.
Wow, now that is amazing.
It's like the pharmacist dream job.
Yes, exactly. And so what do you like the most about practicing in managed care?
Well, besides the schedule, which I think has to just about make it worth it for anyone.
Yes.
I really do, like I said, I really do enjoy seeing new drugs, keeping up with what's out there. The thing that we see a lot of is not necessarily your traditional basic drugs like lisinopril or Crestor, but we see a lot of uses of things off-label that you don't necessarily get taught in pharmacy school, but are, you know, more conventional uses that the doctors know, but you didn't necessarily learn about in pharmacy school. For example, lidocaine nasally for chronic migraine. That's something that I don't think I remember learning in school, but we see a lot of that. Just a lot of off-label uses, and you kind of have to dig through and say, okay, what's, you know, clinically sound and what's, you know, maybe just something that some doctor came up with and it's just, you know, maybe not as clinically sound.
Wow, that's really, really interesting.
Yes, it is. I can say I'm living my life through you at this current moment. So I really wish that. So I guess now we want to move on to like more you being as a financial coach. But first I wanted to know, where did your interest in finance begin?
So my interest in finance, well, I don't know if you would call it finance per se, but my dedication to finance as it comes now started probably in seventh grade when my mom told me that my parents, she and my dad, would not be able to pay for me to go to college and that I would have to essentially pay my own way to college. And so in my mind at that time, as a young person, you know, I knew college costs well more a lot of money than I'd be able to earn from, you know, age 12 or 13 until I went to college. And so that was kind of the point where I started determining, okay, like, I don't want to go into debt for this. And, you know, I knew about debt because my mom listened to Clark Howard every day as when I was a kid. And so I was like, I don't want to go into debt. So what am I going to do? And around that time, my mom went to a seminar about the National Merit Scholarship Program. And we found out that one of the perks of becoming a National Merit Scholar is that you get a lot of scholarship offers. And so at that point, I determined that I was going to become a National Merit Scholar so that I could get a full scholarship to college. And I actually did that.
Congratulations. That is wonderful.
I took the PSAT, scored high enough to become a semifinalist, and then submitted my application to become a finalist. Became a finalist. I accepted a full scholarship to Liberty University, where I graduated from for undergrad. And at that point, I decided to go to pharmacy school. And of course, pharmacy school, at least that I could find at UGA, there are not any full scholarships. I picked UGA. It was the only pharmacy school I applied to, fun fact, because I figured if I couldn't go for in-state tuition, I would just have to figure something else out. And thank God I got accepted, so I didn't have to figure anything else out. And from there, I was very deliberate about how much I took out in student loans going in, because it was always my plan that I was going to pay off my loans and then do whatever I wanted. Work in pharmacy part-time and do whatever I wanted. That's what I said I was going to do.
I know, that's right. So we thought it was absolutely amazing that you were able to pay off over $100,000 of student loan debt in less than 3 years. What was the journey like, and what kind of spending habits did you have to adapt to make that happen?
Well, it was something that I went into pharmacy school with the intention of doing. So it really started in pharmacy school.
Okay.
Other than the first year, which I moved to Athens and I didn't know the area, and so I wasn't able to secure a cheap housing as I would have liked, and I also didn't have a job. Because I was in Virginia at that time and I moved back, so it was kind of, you know,
in between.
A transition time where I was trying to look for a job and figure everything out. But other than that first year, I didn't take out any loans for living expenses. I had my job, that I got December 2013, and I worked there, and that's what paid for my gas and my car, my rent. I found a cheap rent. I was so proud of this, $200 a month.
Wow.
Living with a couple other girls, and so I was able to pay that from working and my food and everything like that. So I graduated with a fairly low balance. And once I graduated, I started off saving up an emergency fund. And then I paid off my first loan, my Perkins loan, which was interest-free. And I wanted to do that because I didn't want it to start accruing interest. And then I attacked my regular federal loans. And essentially, it sounds cliche, but I just lived as a pharmacy student for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. I didn't buy a new car. I actually still have the same car that my dad bought me when I went to college. And she's still going. Mm-hmm. And hopefully she'll still be going for a while. But yes, yeah, so I lived as a student. I saved up money. And at the time, my life was fairly simple. I wasn't married or anything like that. When I got married, it became a little bit more complicated mm-hmm. because my husband loves to spend money. And so kind of, you could almost say in a way, he was my first client besides myself. because I had to get him on board with the debt-free lifestyle. And so that's a whole journey in and of itself. But really just saving aggressively, minimizing expenses as much as possible. The one purchase that I did make was something I wanted since I was 16. I got LASIK.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Wow, that's absolutely amazing.
Yes, I don't see anything wrong with that. What is your financial advice for someone who's in the early stages of their career? Like, where do they start? Should they start immediately investing, saving, just to automatically start their loan repayment?
The first thing is to sit down and take stock of where you are financially. So how much do you have in savings? How much do you have in student loan debt, obviously, but also credit card debt or any other kind of debt? Just kind of take stock of where you are, and from there, figure out your priorities, and that will kind of tell you the way. I would say, as a rule of thumb, you're in a situation where you're working for someone and you have a 401k and you get an employer match. I think it's always wise to contribute to the employer match point so that you don't lose out on that free money. But beyond that, all the debt that you have that's above around a 5% interest rate, that's going to be the focus to pay off versus investing. Of course, it's also important at the same time to make sure that you have an emergency fund. So if you don't have one, that would probably be the first priority. And then, you know, debt payoff and going from there.
Okay, sounds good. And there's been a lot of talk about consolidating loans or refinancing loans. So when and why should someone consider consolidating or refinancing? And kind of like, what's the difference between those options?
So I would say that if you are serious about paying off your student loans in a quick way and you have high interest rates, then it's worth looking into refinancing. Just because a lot of times in this, I'm not sure what the current percentage for student loans is, but I know when I had my student loans, my highest ones, it kind of went up over the years as the government changed the rates, but the highest ones, and actually the most of them, were at 6.8%. And a lot of times, depending on your credit score, your credit worthiness, you can maybe refinance down to 3 or 4% or even 5%. Might be worth it over 6.8% if you're looking to pay your student loans off quickly. If you're not looking to pay them off quickly, then I would say probably if you have, you know, government loans, to keep them as government loans, because obviously you have protections in terms of being able to defer if something happens. You have more protections with the government loan. So I would say it's kind of a cost-benefit analysis between how much can refinancing help me pay off faster, how secure is my situation, and, you know, how much of an advantage am I getting by refinancing? I think those are kind of the big things to look at when you're considering it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Alrighty. And then what are your thoughts regarding loan forgiveness programs, like the ones that are 10-year, 20, 30 versus paying them off completely as quickly as possible? What's your preference, or what do you think about that program?
Well, my personal opinion on loan forgiveness programs, and this comes from my level of risk tolerance, which is probably very low compared to maybe some people's. I think that for a pharmacist and for the amount that we make and the amount of loans that we probably have, I feel like loan forgiveness is a huge gamble. And the reason for that is a lot of times it seems like that's paired with an income-based repayment plan. And what ends up happening is you're accruing interest over time. And so you're not actually paying down the loan, you're just making payments. And so the danger in that is that if something happens with loan forgiveness, and that doesn't have to be that the government gets rid of it, which that could happen. But if you aren't forgiven, like we've seen, you know, everyone's seen the news stories, I think about, you know, only 1% of the applicants so far have been forgiven. Like if your application isn't forgiven for whatever reason, or if you change employers, you have to change employers, your husband gets a job somewhere else, and you have to move and you can't find, you know, a qualified employer there. Or like I know that has happened personally to people in my life, the company that they're working for was a nonprofit and now it's reorganizing. It's no longer a nonprofit. So I just think there's a lot of things that could go wrong in order for that loan forgiveness to happen. Everything has to go right. And that's not something that I think is wise, to depend on everything going right when so many things could go wrong.
That's some really great advice. Like, I've never even heard that before. So, yeah. That's great advice. Thanks.
I think so, too. So what advice do you have for people making payments on their student loans but haven't seen a difference or significant progress with the total principal?
Well, it kind of depends on the situation, because like I was sort of alluding to just now, if you're doing loan forgiveness and you're on an income-based repayment, you probably don't care. In theory, you don't care that the balance is not going down because it's making the certain number of qualified payments that matters, not what happens to the balance. So if that's your case, then probably it doesn't matter. Of course, if you want to actually pay them off, then that's where it's kind of freaky to be paying and not seeing a difference in the balance. And I would say that's the point where you have to do two things. You've got to figure out, you know, there's amortization tables, NerdWallet has one, Bankrate has one, kind of play around with those and see, okay, what's the point where the monthly payment that I'm making starts to pay enough to principal that interest is not compounding and increasing the balance. And then this is where refinancing can come in. If, you know, your interest rate is just so high that the payment that you'd have to make the balance go down is unrealistic, then, you know, consider refinancing if that works for your situation. The other thing would be reworking your budget and cutting out maybe some things that you don't have to have to be able to throw more money at the debt so that the balance will come down.
Okay.
Yes. I kind of also heard that, I think I heard it a long time ago, about when you first graduate from just any school in general, during that grace period, you should save aggressively for your student loans come in, because you don't know how it's going to impact your life, or you have to adjust your life and your finances. Do you think that's a great idea, or should you just start paying in that grace period?
Well, the thing about the grace period, and this is actually, I'll back up and say that if you can, this is probably one thing I didn't do that I wish I did do, pay on your loans during pharmacy school. Because if you have unsubsidized federal loans, which that's pretty much all there is, unless one semester I did get a Perkins loan from UGA, which did not accrue any interest until after the grace period was ended. But that was only a very, very small percentage of my overall loan. So more than likely, the loans that a person has, the interest is accruing even during pharmacy school. And so even anything that you can pay during pharmacy school to minimize, you know, the amount that's accruing interest will help in the long run, because at the end of the grace period, what happens is the interest capitalizes, which means that it's added to the principal. So say you have a $50,000 loan, and now you have, and these are not any kind of like percentages based on real interest rates, just for simple math. So say you have a $50,000 loan, and over the time you've accumulated $5,000 in interest. When the grace period ends, the loan will capitalize, which means that now instead of your balance being, your principal balance being $50,000, it's now $55,000. So you're going to accumulate interest on that whole $55,000 instead of $50,000. And so anything that you can pay during pharmacy school and during the grace period goes to defray that amount of interest that will capitalize. Having said that, I think it's also important to, you know, have other priorities during that time to build your emergency fund and similar, you know, there may be other things in a person's personal life that they need to address during that time before they have a huge student loan payment that they have to pay. So I would say definitely take the time to address those priorities, but do consider as much as you can pay on your student loans even before they come due is definitely a good idea.
Okay, so I guess too, what is like your perspective of people who think, I have student loans, I need to pay off my student loans, I have my emergency, I have established my emergency fund, so now I should strictly pay only student loans? Are some people who said, okay, I got the emergency fund, I'm going to pay some on student loans as well, I'm going to start investing like in IRAs, mutual funds, or just in the stock market? What is your take on that, or perspective?
There's a lot to think about when it comes to investing and kind of splitting up and dividing and conquering. Like I said, I definitely think that if you have an employer match, that you definitely need to be taking advantage of that no matter what. Again, for everything else, it kind of comes down to what's the interest rate on your loans, because in this, you know, maybe a more of an extreme example, but if the interest rate on your loans or whatever debt in question is 10%, you know, the market may not return that. So, and the difference between paying back your student loans, that's actually a return on your investment, because every dollar that you pay off, that's a dollar the bank can't charge you interest on. So you're actually getting a guaranteed rate of return by paying off your student loans versus the market, which does, you know, give good returns and can give even greater returns than, you know, even my 10% example. In some cases, you know, the market goes up and down. You don't know what's going to happen. Overall, though, time in the market is extremely important. So I do think that contributing something is advisable. But I think that if you have student loans at a high interest rate, that should probably, if you want to pay them off, if you don't want to pay them off, disregard all of this advice. But if paying off your student loans is important to you, then that's probably going to have to be the priority. You know, maybe if you have $1,000, $750 goes to student loans, $250 goes to investing. Because again, time in the market, if you have $500 and you invest that $500 a month for 40 years, you're going to be a millionaire off that $500 a month alone. So, you know, it may not take, if you have time in the market, if you have long enough to stay in the market, it may not take as much money as you're thinking to do that versus pay off your student loans, which is obviously going to take a lot of money, most likely.
Yes, I totally agree. And I like how you said a greater return of investment. I think that's a good way to look at student loans, how to pay it off. It's a great return of investment. I guess now we want to talk more about your debt-free PharmD business. So what services do you currently offer?
So Debt-Free PharmD is a one-on-one financial coaching practice. To pharmacists, I offer two services and they're kind of stair-step on each other. So I have a foundations and goals program, which is one-on-one coaching for 3 months to help a person identify kind of where they are, where they want to be, and then a personalized, straightforward plan to help them get there. From there, if desired, a person can transition into accountability and growth, which is more of sort of just a check-in and addressing any financial issues that they may have that may come up. It's better because it's someone that's already, you know, familiar with your finances, familiar with your goals. And when you have certain questions about, you know, maybe should I buy a car or should I, you know, should we try saving for a house or should we do X? You know, you have someone that's already familiar with your financial situation and can kind of give you those answers or advice based on knowing you and your goals.
Oh, awesome. And then can you share with PharmD Unscripted listeners one of your greatest client success stories?
So I have a couple favorite success stories.
Okay.
The one that most closely pertains to my coaching, I would say, is, and this is what surprises me a lot of times, you know, obviously there's financial benefits, but there are benefits in other ways. And I had someone that I worked with for a short while who, after speaking with me, she came back a couple months later, actually, and told me, after talking with you, my relationship with my husband has improved. We're more on the same page about money. We were, you know, maybe having little issues for a while there, and we've been able to kind of reconcile and get on the same page about money and move forward.
That's important.
Yes, definitely. So it goes beyond finances. And another story of mine, which I mentioned that my first client, so to speak, has been my husband, because there's definitely been some coaching there. And so he, of course, has taken everything and run with it, and he shared it with some of his friends, and he had a friend that took his advice, and that friend has been able to start a business, pay off his debt, and he and his girlfriend are expecting a child, and they're in just such a better financial position than they would have been had he, you know, before he kind of received this advice and went and ran with it. So I didn't coach him myself personally, but my mm-hmm. husband was telling me that story, you know, based on what I had kind of told my husband. He told his friend, and, you know, it had some really good implications for him going forward.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah. So what do you love most, and what do you find to be the most challenging with your business
and being a farmerpreneur? The thing I love most about my business, I would say, is seeing the life change and transformation that people go through with their finances. And not only, like I said, just with their finances and the literal numbers themselves, but also the transformation that comes in their lives personally, you know, in relationships. I like to kind of think of managing your finances as a way to reclaim your life, because I feel like so many pharmacists are looking for a way to reclaim their lives, and a lot of times managing their money better will let them do that. I think that the thing that's most challenging as a farmerpreneur, I would say the thing that's most challenging is finding the time to do everything, have my day job, have my business, and still have time for myself, my husband. As far as in business itself, I think the hardest thing for me is really just putting myself out there and doing marketing, because I can be a little bit shy and I don't want people to judge me.
Okay, we are going to close out our show. And so what we do here at PharmD Unscripted is close our show out with a jewel of the day. And that's just a piece of advice that you've used in your life or in your career. And so we would like for you to share your jewel of the day with us, Dr. Pedraza.
So my jewel of the day comes from pharmacist and my What's Next coach, Dr. Jerika Dodd. And it is that everything you want is on the other side of what you will and won't do.
I love that. And why do you like that quote? Why did that resonate with you?
Well, as I mentioned, I can struggle with putting myself out there. And so when I struggle with that, I remind myself that I have a goal. I have something that I want. And when I say I will do this or I won't do that to promote myself and grow my business, everything that I want is on the other side of that. So I really have to look at the bigger picture, look at what I'm trying to accomplish, and accept that there might be some temporary discomfort. But if I say that's what I want, then I have to go ahead and overcome and surpass what I say to myself that I won't do.
Okay, I absolutely love that. And you did mention that you have a community called the Debt Free PharmD. Can you just explain a little bit more about what that is? And then also just let our listeners know how they can find you, connect with you, and sign up for your services.
So the Debt Free PharmD community is, it's actually a hashtag that I'm trying to get started, because I know there are other debt-free pharmacists out there, and I know there are other pharmacists out there that want to become debt-free. So it's, first of all, it's a hashtag that I hope, you know, people will start using. But more than that, I want it to be a community, and to that end, to foster that, I've created a group on Facebook called the Debt-Free PharmD Community, and it's just a group where people can go and, you know, encourage each other in the debt-free journey, provide tips, knowledge. I post in there as well, you know, with my tips and things that have helped me. So it's really just a place for pharmacists to kind of come together. And I would also say about the name Debt-Free PharmD, I don't want people to get the wrong idea, because it's not just about getting out of debt, but it's really about, you know, being financially independent and being free, so much more than just student loans and debt payoff, but it rhymes, so that's what I went with.
Yes, well, we love that. We love hashtags. So, okay, you hear that? Yeah. Hashtag debt-free PharmD, okay? And so where can our listeners find you?
You can find me first and foremost on my website, which is lillianpedraza.com. You can obviously find the Debt-Free PharmD community Facebook group on Facebook. Just search Debt-Free PharmD. It should come up. You can find me on Facebook at Dr. Lillian Pedraza, and on Instagram, the same handle at Dr. Lillian Pedraza. I'm also on LinkedIn under just my name, Lillian Pedraza. You can search for that. Pretty much if you search my name on any social media platform except Twitter, I will come up, because I'm not on Twitter.
Okay, yeah, I understand that. Okay, so we just want to thank you for joining us today. You definitely dropped some great financial jewels and advice, which we thank you for. So that's the end of our show. Before we go, remember that sharing is caring. So share this podcast with a friend or a colleague. Follow us on our social media platforms of Facebook and Instagram at FarmD Unscripted, so you can interact with us, leave feedback, share your stories, and all that goodness that social media has to offer. Until next time, we will see you later.